Blog Talk Radio.
Bravo.
And the crowd went narcoleptic. Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio on rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. And that's supposed to be the spiritual universe, the universe all around us. I really meant it that we're just all over the place. I would like to acknowledge WNAH. It's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama as a public service presentation. They have an interesting little shop in there. Hoyt is the station manager, and Tony is the fellow who brings in the revenue from the station selling ad time. Hoyt hasn't taken a day off in over, I think it's 10 years, nine or 10 years, hasn't taken a day off. I think that's insane. He cannot not go to work. And I've seen him through for several years, and even with the most, with illness, back problems, you name it, he makes it to that job every day. So I guess if he could do it, I could do it, but I'd rather him do it. But he gives us this this time, and he does this on the cuff. We don't pay anything for that, but we don't make any money either. So it's a win-win situation for the both of us. We'd also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals that affords us some print space from time to time. And I'd gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B. He's a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families. And I personally believe that the families are the basic unit of our society. And the family's been assailed on all sides. As the years go on and as my years pile up, I could see such a huge difference in the morality of the nation in the last 30 years. It's amazing. And I believe a lot of the troubles we have now with drugs and alcohol, the preponderance of it is that there's no foundation in the family. The children are not being taught correct principles. And because of that, it becomes a tremendous strain on the fabric, the moral fabric of the society. So Harold does that work, and it's a really great work that he does. Harold?
Hello, everybody. Thank you, Joseph, for that introduction. And I'd just like to acknowledge two things. One is that the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous have been a miraculous help to millions of people, and I owe my life to that program, and I really appreciate Joseph's work. The other thing I wanted to say is that this website, rumradio.org, does not make any money. In fact, he sunk thousands into it and continues to improve it at his own expense. So this is done as a public service. We hope you get a lot out of the program. You can call in and contribute or ask questions or just listen to the archived program later. But it's an honor for me to be able to give back, and I appreciate Joseph for creating this safe space to do that. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Well, tonight we have an interview with Mike P. He's the owner of Reflections Recovery out of California. Real interesting fellow. He's got a great story. I think you'll find it interesting. I believe everybody in recovery at a certain point can look back and see the miracle in their own lives. Now, I could see the miracle in your life before I see the miracle in my life, but that's just the way the nature of the beast goes. Are you there, Mike?
I'm here. Thank you very much for having me on your show and letting me be part of this and give me the opportunity to be able to reach out to others and give a piece of my history and my life
Right.
and my recovery.
Looking forward to it. Well, first thing, we'd like to start off the program with the third step prayer. This is one of the first assignments I give to my new sponsees, where I get a sponsee, page 89 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And by the way, this is not Alcoholics Anonymous. We do not represent the AA Fellowship, the NA Fellowship, the CA Fellowship, we're closer probably to the Paranoids Anonymous Fellowship. The only problem is nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings. This is Rum Radio. Although we do use the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous as the basic text, and it's the basic text not just for AA, it's the basic text, well, there's other books and basic texts for other groups, but the basic text of the 12 steps come out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and everything, every other fellowship is a variation of that. But usually the only variation that I found for the most part in the program is that the first step, which acknowledges the substance, alcohol or drugs or codependency, the first step mentions the problem. The other 11 steps are about the solution. I tell my sponsees, when you get to share, remember that percentage. 1/12 is the problem, and 11/12 is the solution. We live in the solution, not in the problem. So I get my sponsee, page 89 of the big book says, go out and find a prospect and start working on them. Prospect's a sales term. And it also is, as a salesman, it's good to remember, you qualify the prospect. And the way I do that is I ask him, have you had enough? If I get a yes, then he's had enough. He asks a question, maybe not. Enough, what do you mean? Have you had enough humiliation? Have you had enough pain? Have you had enough alcohol? Have you had enough? And some people, when they say that, no, they're not ready yet, and that's okay. If they say yes, I'll say, are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Excuse me. Yes or no? Yes. And he's not only telling me, he's telling himself. These are confirmation statements, identity statement to himself. Okay. Then I said, okay, you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. I pull out Clancy's 7 questions. You can find it on the website on how to find the sponsee tab. Scroll down and you'll have Clancy Eyes 7 questions. Nice little mini. It doesn't replace a fourth step that we do, but these are just questions, really good questions. Get them thinking, get them moving. I hand it to them, and I believe luck is nothing more when preparation meets opportunity. So I'm prepared. The student will appear when the teacher is ready. If you're ready, you'll find your sponsee. I give him the questions. Okay, I need you to answer these questions, and I need them back tomorrow. Here's my number. Expect your call. I'm finished. Now, the big book goes into we need to talk to these fellas, but we're not going to Skid Row, and we're not going to the hospital. This guy came in under his own steam. He sniffed out the meeting himself, and he's gotten a beginner's chip and acknowledged the problem. He's ready to go. If somebody comes in and he's just window shopping, well, you can discuss why he's there and what his expectations is, and then you take the conversation from there. But I found this approach works really well. The first assignment I give him is to get a home group, and that's his lifeline group. You connect up in a fellowship. A fellowship will grow up around you once you make your commitment to do certain things. And you get some men's names, men with men and women with women, because we feel that's the most appropriate way. It's easier to relate to the same gender. And sponsorship could also be construed as very intimate. It can be misconstrued very easily, and sex changes everything. So if you can't find the same sex, you work the steps. That's the agreement. So now we got him to the point where he's got these things back, and it's the first assignment that was, he gets a home group, and the home group he gets names from hopefully 20 or 30 men, if he have that many different guys, who gives their phone numbers and permission for them to make a call. These are the good numbers to have for future problems. You can't always get a hold of anybody. We all have cell phones. We all have immediate access to communication. Nobody ever answers the phone. I don't know what that's about, but that's just the way it is. So you might have to call 3 or 4 guys before you make contact. You can't always get a hold of your sponsor. That's it. So you need to have someone, a lifeline, just in case you're out of town, thinking of drinking. So every day for the next 30 days, your first assignment is I want you to call one of the men on that list and ask him permission to recite the third step prayer. And I never give an assignment unless I tell the sponsee what 12-step principle or what character defect or what are we trying to accomplish with this assignment. We're adults. It's always good to know these things. And the reason I do that gets you used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. It connects him up with his fellowship. He gets to know their name, and they get to know his name. The third step prayer also encapsulates what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever 12-step program you happen to be in. I'm flexible. I'm a refugee from several 12-step programs. And fourthly, the person who he's calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink, his first hit of crack, his first whatever, and the chances are he will not. And so that puts everybody into a state of service. Your new man is already into service. And this is the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen.
Amen. That's great.
Thank you. I think it's a good way to invite the Spirit into what we're doing. The 12th step as the result. We've had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And that's the one result that we look for by working all 12 steps is a spiritual awakening. That's the result. And this is all we do is to come to that agreement. So I'd like to find out, Mike, how what we usually, you're familiar with the program, I'm sure, but we talk about in the meetings is our experience, strength, and hope. I like
yes.
to think experience is an inventory of our past mistakes. Strength is the ability to lift and carry. We lift our fellows and we carry the message. It's what keeps us sober. And hope is the belief that our lives will continue to improve when we do the next right thing. And the next right thing is not to take that first drink of alcohol. The clean house is suggested in the 12 steps as found in the basic text of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And to trust in God and the process he gave us. So we talk, that's what we're talking about. And then we're going to talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So tell us, Mike, what was it like?
What was it like? Okay, well, I want to start off by saying that I truly do believe that if I want to live and not die, that I must show another alcoholic precisely how others have recovered through the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's going to play out in my story because I have made the mistake of not doing this is a 12-step program, not an 11-step program, not a 10-step program, but a 12-step program. And I've not done what I've needed to do in order to have success. And relapse is part of my process, but it's also been something that's been part of a spiritual awakening for me. So my experience, definitely to go back to, I'm a Bostonian at birth, so born in Boston, Massachusetts, but, I have lived all over the country. I was desensitized at an early age to chemical use, in the house and stuff like that. I've had the opportunity to live impoverished and also with means and without want. So I've had a pretty rounded, life growing up. I've got parents that have loved me and taken care of me and did the best that they could with what they had. And I definitely had a personality from the beginning that was appeared obsessive or did appear addictive. For me, the first awakening was my first drink. I remember being, 15 or 14 years old, my early teens, with a brother on a New Year's Eve and, going to the parents' liquor cabinet and, me with my sibling, he, takes a sip of the alcohol and, hands it to me and you know, I take one sip and I taste that, you know, and I just go back for it and I start guzzling the bottle. And that's the way it was for me, is when I took that drink, I felt that that allergy or that they talk about in the big book, I felt like that change for me, is it something that it was, whatever it was, wasn't working, that it filled something for me, and I, you know, it affected me in a different way than it did my brother. And it carried on, and it definitely, you know, altered my life from that point on. So
change your perception. Your first time you drank, the world changed. Is that?
Yeah,
I hear that.
Absolutely.
I know as an alcoholic too. I do that. It's kind of magical. You know, people say, "Well, why did you do that?" I said, "Well, you know, I wouldn't have continued to do it if it didn't have an allure to it. If it wasn't fun, if it wasn't exciting, if it wasn't adventuresome, I wouldn't have kept it up."
I liked it. Whatever that was missing in my life, it fixed it. It worked. That's why I did it. I did it because it worked. And, you know, that began a pretty long experience of, you know, years of me, you know, going out there and allowing myself to, you know, to build an unmanageable life. You know, I made it almost all the way through high school, and, you know, and because of my drinking, I didn't finish school because I made a definite conscious effort that I had a choice. I could have either done what I was supposed to be doing, or I could have, you know, filled out other things and been drinking, and I did that. And so I definitely have consequences in my life for my drinking, and I made some choices. I chose to drink over many successes, and I've had, you know, some positions in life where I've had, you know, failures. In fact, most of my failures throughout most of my young life was a direct result because of my chemical use. I've had a lot of good things that have happened, a lot of good opportunities, and each time they were sabotaged by my choices to, you know, to drink. So, let's see here.
Well, I know the alcoholic, and as one, we have this innate ability to screw up at the we have perfect timing when it comes to a screw up. You know, right at the wrong time, whatever that might be, that's the time when we would get loaded. We had to make a decision. We had to go to court. We had a meeting at work. There was somehow, it would always seem to play out that way. We were supposed to meet a girl, but we got loaded, and by the time we got there, she was gone. You know, just it goes on and on and on. Is that your experience?
Absolutely. In the worst of times, it was the excuse. In the best of times, it was an opportunity for me to sabotage and blow up my life. And there was definitely that, you know, element of control, of not being able to, you know, to make a choice or to have a choice, of being able to be there for those places, for those experiences, of family events, important timing, whatever it is. It was definitely has been part of that. So I originally tried to get clean in 1999 and to get sober, and I was hospitalized and was shipped, made a geographical change, was sent over to New Hampshire, and you know, I made the decision because I had, you know, other issues, that, you know, alcohol was something that I could manage. And you know, I definitely thought that by the time I was 20, when I was 19 years old, people were telling me that I probably shouldn't drink or do anything else, and realized that they were wrong, or I wasn't listening, or that it was something that I needed to figure out on my own. So it took years. It took years for me to, you know, drink a little bit and try and control, and then drink on weekends or holidays or just at night, and, you know, not at that, and then would ultimately end up, you know, losing jobs, losing employment, burning bridges, and, you know, would move somewhere else. So that lasted till, I started life over about five times, different careers. You know, I was a cook, a construction worker, all kinds of different things, a limo driver, and, you know, every didn't matter how important the job was or how easy the job was, I still managed to screw it up, you know. And I didn't recall anybody ever telling me to get help or to do anything about it, I think, until the end, which would be in 2006 when I reached a hopeless state of mind. I reached a place in my life that things were not getting any better. They were absolutely out of control. I hated what I became. I hated the perception of what people had seen me, what I had seen in myself, the inability to look at myself in the mirror, and the absolute desire to do anything to change. And, you know, I did end up going to a jail. You know, I've had some history with that, but that's where my first encounter with Alcoholics Anonymous was a grapevine, you know, and was able to read some of that. And
in jail? Was that you
yeah.
in jail?
Yeah, I was in jail at the time. And, you know, that's when I was to the point where I didn't want to try and cut any corners anymore. I wanted to try something different that, you know, if there was treatment out there, if there was something out there for me, that I was now willing to do that, you know. And I got an opportunity to I was actually living in Steamboat, Colorado at the time doing the ski bump thing.
Mm-hmm.
And was given the opportunity to come to Southern California and to go into treatment. And that's where, you know, I went to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on a Friday night. And I still remember the feeling very much. And it was, this is where I belong, you know, I'm finally home. Like, there was all of the questions, all of the things that I was going through, I felt like, you know, there's finally going to be some solution here, there's going to be some answers, and I can, you know, look to some other people and get the direction that I need so that I don't have to keep feeling the way I'm feeling and go back to where I came from. And
isn't that a great feeling? You enter the rooms and you can tell, wow, I belong here.
Yeah.
with a bunch of derelicts, a bunch of drunk.
Yeah, I'm not alone. There's others like me. It was an amazing
room.
Thing. Others' misery made me feel so much better for some reason. But,
I know. It's weird. Right. I had the same experience. And the place I went to, it looked like I got to Austin, and the first thing I did, I called it intergroup. And to get, and that's what I suggest to my sponsees, if they're traveling, always call up the local intergroup, and they'll tell you, give you directions to the closest AA meeting. And the way the guy was describing it was, I didn't know my way around. He said, you go down this road, and you turn here, and you can't miss it. It's the last house on the block. He says, you won't be able to miss it. It looks exactly what a place alcoholics would go.
Mm-hmm.
And it did. It looked like an old crack house. But I walked in, and I felt very comfortable there. And I, you know, like, it was more emotional and spiritual than physical.
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, I felt like I finally found, like, a long-lost friend. So, you know, I went into recovery. I went into a treatment program. I did, you know, a long term in treatment, 90 days of treatment, and, you know, moved as close as I could to the beach to do some sober living. And there started the journey of me going to, you know, meetings on my own and, you know, riding the bus and doing all kinds of things. It was a tough thing along the way for my first year. I got a sponsor and I took direction and we started going through the steps. And it was definitely a change in my life, you know. And I have to say, unfortunately, I didn't do it right the first time. You know, my vision of what recovery was, I got a lot of suggestions of what had worked, but the principles, the fundamental principles that's in the big book, I didn't apply them the way I should have, you know, and that's the bottom line, you know. And I definitely forgot that that whether I have a day, a week, a month, 2 years, 20 years, that my head is going to tell me that I can have a drink. And eventually, if I don't work the steps and I don't do things the way that they're designed, then I'm gonna get loaded. I'm gonna drink. And that was my experience, you know.
And you said you worked the steps, though. Was it the sponsor that he didn't know what he was doing, or you were going to work your own program? Where was the falling off with that? Usually if you do the steps thoroughly, you know, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Now, of course, if you're following your own path, there's usually going to be trouble. What did your path look like compared to the path that we consider thorough?
Well, for me, finishing the steps.
How far did you get?
I got through my fifth step, and I stopped the first time. And I used that, you know, talk about half measures, not even half measures. You know, and I held on to that, and I stayed dry, and, you know, didn't take until years later where I went back out and came back in, that the untreated alcoholism, you know, and not thoroughly going through that and working through, you know, and working with other alcoholics and carrying the message, you know, in prayer and meditation and doing a continued inventory. You know, it took me to go back out to realize, you know, the forward to the second edition of Alcoholics who really tried, you know, 50% got sober. And I had to ask myself that question, did I really try? You know, and there was a lot of success, and there's a lot of good things that had happened in my life, but the bottom line is I only did it 50%. You know, I didn't do everything that this book tells us to do. And I wanted to say that it was a total loss, but it was definitely a wake-up call for me, and there's a lot of things, and there's, you know, God in my life and a lot of things that had happened, a lot of blessings, but ultimately it led to my demise. So,
you know, it's interesting. It was step five. In my experience as a sponsor, I have lost a lot of fellas on step five. Well, not a lot, but once early on sponsoring, I would always seem to lose them on step. And we would do step five, and then six would be, didn't look like much after the effort from four and five. Six isn't much, and what would happen? I could never seem to put my finger on it. It says that it separates. Step six will separate the boys from the men, but I believe there's a different component. Step five gives us, it's the beginning of a true kinship between God and man. So it's a pretty heady place once you've done step five, and now all the pain is gone. And the motivation to work the rest of the steps with that pain also takes a bus. And I believe that's what happens to a lot of these fellas. You're not drinking. You got a spiritual connection with God now. As an alcoholic, I'm gonna do as little as possible to get the maximum result.
Right. Which fits in with pretty much where with a lot of us, you know, wanting to do the bare minimum possible and get the best results possible. But that's not how this works. So,
no, it doesn't. Okay, so then how long was it before now that you went back out then, I take it? You had a slip or relapse?
Yeah, it was a short period of time. I was going to meetings. And the funny thing is you'll hear, you know, at meetings people saying, you know, if you just go to meetings or if you just have a sponsor, then you'll be fine, you know, if you just don't pick up today.
No.
But for me, that's not the case because I was going to meetings. I had a sponsor, which was a phone number in my phone that I would call and check in every once in a while, but I wasn't living the steps. I wasn't actively working the steps. You know, I forgot that when I put a drink into my system, that it will eventually lead to a catastrophic demise, that I will go down. It may take a little bit of time. It may take a lot of time, but it will get me. And, you know,
the way I tell my sponsees, is once you take that first drink, you've lit a fuse. Now, I don't know how long that fuse is, but eventually it might be a day, might be a couple hours, might be a week, might be a month, but eventually that fuse is going to hit the keg.
Yeah.
That's my experience with that.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that was a big difference for me.
How long did you go out? You were on the out? What, weeks, months?
It was a few weeks.
Okay.
A few weeks. And the funny thing was, it had been enough time, and I'd spent enough time in the program that I had surrounded myself with people that had cared about me, that there was solution there, and that when I had that moment of clarity, that I had nowhere else to go but back to the rooms, you know. And the things that I had known that I, you know, said that I didn't know that I needed to do, that when I really asked myself the question, what is it that you need to do, the answer was there. I knew I needed to come back. I knew I needed to actively work the steps. I knew I needed to give myself completely to the program and do what was necessary, because that's why I drank. And so it was a short term.
Sure, so good. And usually my experience is that when people go out, the alcohol disease itself is growing. You know, we say it's doing push-ups in the parking lot,
yes.
Meaning the phenomenon of alcoholism just because you stop drinking. I've seen guys go out after, and actually the longer the time you're sober and you go out, the results are devastating. It's unbelievable. It's like, how could this possibly, this man go so far down so fast? And I think it's spiritual. It was just like he would been drinking all that time anyway, and when it comes hard. The other thing I tell you, the newcomer is life's blood to AA, just like the old timer is the backbone. But relapse is the soul, because there's nothing more tormented than a head full of AA and a belly full of booze.
Mm. Yes, absolutely.
So are you back in now?
Yeah, absolutely. And things going to be better, and things have progressed, and, you know, and that's where, you know, today I have a program. Today I have an opportunity to work with other alcoholics, to work with people that are trying to change their lives and to do what's necessary. And, you know, I went back to school. You know, I'm a registered addiction specialist now. I'm a mental health worker, so I can work with co-occurring disorders and dual diagnosis. You know, I have a certificate with alcohol and drug studies. I was able to apply myself and put myself in a position that I could help others to learn from my mistakes, to help others to, you know, give them a little guidance on what it is that they need to do to change with, you know, with that foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous, of the big book, you know.
Did you get a new sponsor? You went back to the same sponsor, and how long did it take you to get through the steps?
Actually went through the steps more rapidly. Actually went through the steps in about 6 weeks, as opposed to, and I did change sponsors, and I was part of the other fellowship, and, it took me, you know, a long time to go through the steps the first time. And, you know, the next time around, it was something that was going to be done differently, and I, you know, became part of a group or fellowship that did things a little bit differently, more by the book, if you would. And, my perception of what a lot of perceptions of people that are out there is that take your time. You know, do one step a month and you're good. That was, you know, for me, you know, if you're going to give me all the time in the world to be able to change things or do what I need to do, then I'm going to take that time, you know. So I knew, someone that's in the program that was hard-nosed, that was doing things, you know, in a rapid way, and I knew that that's what I needed, you know, in order to get this thing and to do it and to not sit on my steps, to not sit on the work and to sit on all the stuff that was just there that I wasn't dealing with.
And I had
made a big difference.
I had a sponsee who was a ship's captain, like Joe Hazelton kind of guy with the oil tankers and things, and chronic relapses since 94, and I grabbed the whole of them at the local Post Oak Club here in Houston, and we started working the steps, and his home group in New Jersey, now this is not all Jersey, this was just his home group, and some groups I've heard in Canada, you had to go to meetings for a year before you could work the steps. I said, you got to be kidding. You're pulling my leg. I tell people that they get angry at me for telling them that. That's where the year gets you. I tell them, look, let's look at the basics on this. Dr. Bob had 3 days when he was working with Bill D. at the hospital. There's no reason to drag those things out more than necessary. You can be thorough, but you don't sacrifice thorough for timely. Timely, I believe, is the key that we're missing in this lock.
Absolutely.
So you work through the steps, and Now you've gotten passionate, you're going to give it back, right? The one immunity we have from alcohol, intensive work with another alcoholic, this activity works when other activities fail. So you got passionate, you work. Now you're a sponsor.
Yes.
And how did that work out for you?
Much better. And that's where, you know, I had use in, you know, working in the field as well, of needing to be careful of not making, you know, your work your program. But, you know, that was one thing that I'd done is, you know, going to meetings and doing, you know, and having an existence sponsor and, you know, trying to work with people and help people is not being a sponsor. It's not going through the steps with a prospect. You know, that's one difference that it is. And being able to do that now, man, it's unbelievable. You know, it's one of the things that you didn't expect was going to be. I mean, they told me that my sponsor told me, if you want to save your life and you're really going to do this, then you're going to go through this program and carry the message. Otherwise, we probably shouldn't do this. And if you're willing to do that, then we can do it. So I knew that I wanted to do it in order to save my life, but I didn't realize, you know, how rewarding and how incredible it would actually be, you know, on top of it, that the gifts on top of that.
Initially, they tell us that in the big book, it says who would want to do all this? The phraseology is that, no, most people are not going to want to go through all this unless it was to save our own lives. So there's that, you know, that selfishness, we do it. But by doing it, we find that there's more of a spiritual benefit than we'd ever expected. When you have a sponsee and the lights go on, and I've seen people come into the room who are spiritually bankrupt, the light is gone in their eyes. It's a physical phenomenon.
Yeah.
You could look at it, their eyes are dark, man. The spirit has taken a hike. They're empty shells, and then you see slowly and sometimes quickly that light starts coming back on, and they're starting to get it. And you know that you had a little bit to do with it. It's really God. The sponsor, to me, brings you to the understanding of God, because you can't really keep anybody sober, get anybody sober. We wish we could, but we can't. And if we think we can, we're playing God again. But it's nice to know that you're about your father's business when you see the next sufferer come alive.
Absolutely. It makes me think about, you know, we found much of heaven, and we've been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence, which we had not even dreamed. You know, I'd always wanted to be an astronaut, you know, and I've done plenty of things to try to make me fly, but, you know, this being rocketed into a fourth dimension and having feeling a piece of heaven just from the opportunity, you know, of accomplishing things and seeing things that was beyond what my dreams were. You know, most of my dreams exist that were of monetary means, but not to a level that's, you know, fourth dimensionally. So it's
which is a spiritual dimension.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like the Twilight Zone, not of mind, not of body, but of spirit.
Right.
We're rocketed into a spiritual dimension that we never really expected. Carl Jung called alcohol addiction a lower form of spirituality, which is interesting because we were seeking God at the wrong address. Is that how you look at it, Harold?
That's I usually have a chance to mention that phrase on a daily basis to some of the families I work with. Alcohol and drug abuse is a search for God at the wrong address.
Mm.
And then I pause and let that sink in, and some people are amazed by that. I think for some it just goes over their head, but it's worth thinking about. It's worth mentioning and planting a seed. We're not responsible for the results, just planting the seeds and taking care of some of the weeds if we can. Get out those error thinking.
So, Mike, thank you, Harold. So now that, okay, you're sponsoring guys. Now, how does your recovery deal come about? I mean, you just didn't walk into a place. I mean, somebody had to look at it, have a dream, pay the rent. put some brick and mortar together. I mean, you know, these things just don't happen on their own. How did yours happen? How did your dream come up?
Well, it was something I think that, you know, being part of this thing and, you know, going to school and getting the education and, you know, working, you know, I guess I could start towards the beginning of how I got into the field, and that, you know, and that definitely led to where I'm at today. And, you know, that would be, you know, living in a sober living, getting an opportunity, you know, showing some leadership, showing some initiative, and getting an opportunity to be, you know, a house parent or a house manager, of, you know, and doing what I could to help out there, and then getting an opportunity to work in a detox facility, you know, and helping people to walk through that process of detoxification, then getting an opportunity to, you know, to do some counseling and to do some admissions and some intakes, and then ultimately getting a position as a counselor and doing that for some years, and, you know, doing groups and doing counseling and working with others and, you know, program development. And, you know, I, over that term of seeing the different types of things that were going on and working for some different programs, I've, you know, I think I'd have to give credit to my parents too, both being business owners, of seeing that kind of freedom that they had, and me wanting to do that too, but having it centered in this field, you know, of helping others. I actually had started going to school to be a software engineer, and it became very apparent, you know, once I had start working in this industry, that I enjoyed working with people more than computers. And it was something that I think I had always wanted to do, and just had, you know, was waiting for an opportunity to do that. So putting one step in front of the other and making the most out of the circumstances that I had, again, God did the work of giving me an opportunity to work with some incredible people and an opportunity to turn one of my ideas or dreams into a program. You know, and
how'd you get your financing? Did you finance it? Did you pray about it? I met a fellow one time during the International in San Antonio, and I can't remember his name now, but he had an old, dilapidated building that was going to be torn down, and he went to the city, and now it's the center where a lot of alcoholics live, the winos. He just got the winos off the street, and they had fixed it up. He got the money. And it was just by prayer and his enthusiasm built that building.
Right. Well, I had worked with some people, you know, and that had, you know, seen me in action and knew that what I do, know about my philosophy, and I'd been speaking with them about what it is that I wanted to do, and got an opportunity to have a larger program that had, I guess, believed in me and believed in what I wanted to do. And they, you know, said, hey, you know, we have the finances, you have the idea, let's kind of merge here with what we've already been successful doing and make something of this here, you know. So it was kind of an amazing thing, because I had wanted to do it, and actually in 2011 I created the name Reflections Recovery, and you know, wanted to, you know, make something of it eventually, and it just kind of sat there, you know, and was working on a business plan and trying to figure things out, and you know, speaking with the right people, and they said, well, you know, let's do it. And so, you know, that's how things kind of came about.
And you found the building, and
Found space. And have gone, you know, have gone on from there. So, you know, we are, you know, Reflections Recovery Center. It's, you know, we apply a comprehensive, integrated, individual, and holistic approach. You know, we're trying to help individuals identify and address any underlying core issues, as well as core issues that are related to their addictive behaviors. You know, our program offers all kinds of stuff that's ultimately the goal of what, you know, the same thing as the big book, is freedom. You know, freedom from addiction and alcoholism, compulsive behaviors, underlying trauma, stability and mental health issues, along with reintegrating the individual back into independent living, you know, having success in life. So, you know, some of the things that we do is, you know, we try and empower empowerment and confidence, you know, the ability to experience a healthy and sober lifestyle, try and get them in a position where they're self-supporting, you know, and doing what they need to be, socially responsible, paying bills, you know, doing what they need to do, and ultimately help, want them to have a new freedom and a new happiness.
Okay, say I come up to you, and how do you find me, or how do I find you? I mean, do you go out and find folks, or do you market? Marketing is a part of the deal now, internet marketing, or you have to find people. Do you do detox? Okay, I need a place. I'm Jones, and I want to quit, but I've been drinking and drugging too long that I just can't stop. I'm afraid of a grand mal seizure, heart attack, or stroke, or worse. Now I need to get detoxed. Do I find you in the book and say I can get detoxed, and now I can get sober because if I don't do something, I'm going to die, or worse? Now I'm ready to go. I'm at the jumping off point, and I found you. Now what? Now how did I find you, or did you find me, or both?
Well, both. You know, we do marketing in the area. We're on the internet. We have contacts with other facilities and other, you know, entities that are out there that are trying to find help for individuals that may be employers or employees, you know, that, you know, family members. We try and reach everybody on all different walks. But how it works is, you know, we do initial screening and assessment. You know, we try and figure out what it is that the client needs. How can we reach those needs in an appropriate way? And we, you know, take them through the recovery process from beginning to end. You know, so for us, we don't physically have a detox, but we have a lot of detoxes in the areas that we do referrals to, and we work with and get them going. So if they do have medical needs, that those needs can be met, and then they can begin to go through the treatment process. And once they go through that treatment process, we also, you know, encourage them to stay connected and to get the accountability that they need for long-term recovery. So, you know, that includes individual treatment planning, psychiatric evaluations, ongoing medication consultation. We have 24-hour crisis support from on-call treatment professionals. Excuse me. But the treatment process includes individual and group process, psychodrama. You know, like we had mentioned earlier, that there is a family and multifamily group process and workshop that we do monthly. We do alcohol and drug education. You know, we're 12-step and spiritual-based program. We're governed by AA. We do offer anger management, relapse prevention, continuum of care, life skills. You know, if someone's trying to get into college prep or motivation, some sort of career, you know, we do that too. And one of the things being in Southern California and the weather being the way it is and us being so close to many things, we do encourage fun. You know, so we want to go and take trips. We want to encourage, you know, we have a marina down here. We're right next to the beach. You know, there's things that I've found that, you know, if we can't have fun doing this thing, then why are we doing it? It is an important process. So I'd like to say we're a diverse, well-rounded program. We like to stick to the fundamentals of what it is, try and reach the core issues, and try and help people to find their footing again. And, you know, we encourage clients to get sponsors. We encourage clients to go to AA meetings. We encourage them to go through the steps. You know, that's part of the process, but then we also offer other things, too, that's going to be able to help them have a well-rounded recovery.
You do the steps there, or do you want them to go do the steps with a sponsor in the AA venue?
We have them go through the steps with the sponsor, the way it was designed. We have 12-step panels that come in. We have education groups. We have book studies, but you know, when it comes to going through the steps, our clients go through the steps with sponsors. So that's one of the important things that we encourage them to do.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
So, and then we have other things that we have them do too to help their growth.
It's more comprehensive. A lot of folks don't realize that, you know, AA can help get you sober in recovery, but it's a long journey. And
yes.
It's not, I like to put it to you this way, it's a kind way of saying it, AA is not a hotbed of mental health. You know, once you get sober, there's usually huge issues that have not been addressed or sometimes will never be addressed because we still have the idea that, you know, I'm sober. Is that not enough? And it isn't. It, you know, the big book is real plain about that. Mom, you know, hey, Ma, the wind has stopped. Ain't it grand? You know, and that's saying the tornado has passed. I'm not drinking anymore. So, but all the damage is still there. So how do we get rid of the damage? And that's a mental health. There's a lot of mental health. I tell my sponsees, if you really want to be a good AA sponsor, you need to go to Al-Anon. Because you're going to be working with a lot of alcoholics. I also believe Al-Anon is sort of like postgraduate AA. But you have it more than that. Now you have inpatient and outpatient. How do you work that?
Yeah, we have a center. So there's houses or residences that clients can go to. And then we have different levels of care that offer people, you know, their needs. So, you know, basically, you know, you go for a detox. You know, there's detox, residential treatment, outpatient or day treatment is what we call it, and then you have intensive outpatient and then a monitoring system that would go on beyond that for long term, you know, which is like 6 months to a year, you know, even longer sometimes. So we basically have found that if we can help a client get to, you know, 1 year, that it increases their chances exponentially to be able to stay clean and sober. So having some sort of level of accountability and, you know, offering them different levels of care that gives them a little more freedom and growth as they go, it just sets them up for better success. So it's not, you know, it's not a unique design. It's a design that's been used in other facilities and stuff like that, and we've seen success in. And it's, you know, our heart is in the right place. We're not just trying to get somebody in here and get them out. You know, we want to have contact with families. We want to have contact with clients. We want to make sure that when they make that decision that they're going to do what they need to do, that we help them see it through all the way. You know, and it is a process, you know. That's where, you know, so where the long road ends and the journey begins, you know, this is a journey. You know, this is a journey for us, and we want to be part of it, and we want to help people on that journey to have success. And do it in a way that we can be with them along the way.
Let me ask you this now. It's just an assumption. I didn't know. Well, two things I was going to say. One is on the website I did the I came across THIQ and the disease concept of alcoholism. It's a buildup of THIQ, which is a chemical derivative from extended use of alcohol. And it stays in the brain for 5 years, 5 to 7 years after you stop drinking. And they use THIQ, they've given it to rats. Rats would start drinking alcohol that would normally not have drank alcohol when they introduced the THIQ. So that residual, a lot of folks don't understand why that five-year part with the alcoholic is so critical, and I believe this is part of it. There's a physiological components that are going along with the spiritual and the emotional.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, this is a long-term deal. It's a journey, and people don't realize, oh, well, I'm sober now, and I'm, you know, I got 6 months under my belt, and I'm good to go. You know, I think I'm going to celebrate my long-term sobriety and have a drink. I can,
yes.
You know, I need to enjoy this good time. Now, my experience, I've had people going to rehab centers and like a vacation, you know, they get well and, you know, now they're good and they're working out and they're eating good food and they're spiritually enlivened. And now they're, especially movie stars, I know they're outrageous for this, you know, like a fat farm for spirituality. Now they go out and they can go do it again. You find any of that?
Absolutely. You know, people come to treatment and choose this option, you know, for all different kinds of reasons. The ones, you know, that do have the success are the ones that usually are to the point where they're willing to do anything, take direction, do what's necessary, not do the bare minimum, but go above and beyond what they think they need, but to just to take, you know, be in this thing for the long haul. And yeah, absolutely. People will go through the process and say, "I'm done. Let's celebrate," you know, or I just need to get a grip on things, and not, and they need to go back out there. And that's where, you know, these retreads are. You know, cases that people that they haven't quite figured out, or they needed to do the research necessary in order for them to say, "Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. I can't do this." So, you know, it happens. You know, just like in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know,
sure, I'm sure. So. Harold likes to say that more people overdose on alcohol than all the other drugs combined.
It's absolutely dangerous. I know that when people come in with the highest levels of alcohol, you know, we call them hot fives, or they're blowing, you know, their BACs or their blood alcohol levels that are, you know, off the charts, you know, that they're definitely at risk, you know, and, you know, the seizures, and, I mean, it's absolutely dangerous, more dangerous than most of the others. So
I lost a guy 2 years ago who was secretly drinking heavily, accidentally suddenly quit. He had a seizure and died. Age 51, great guy, funny guy. But a lot of people don't understand how dangerous alcohol is. I'm dealing with a heart flutter right now because of heavy drinking years ago. And a lot of people don't realize that if you have a friend who's drinking heavily, do not encourage them to quit cold turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Do Absolutely. Not do that.
Yeah.
They need a doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, originally in AA, the old AA, they would, before the hospitals got involved with it, or some of them couldn't afford it because they're just coming right off Skid Row, they had the booze actually in the rooms, in the AA rooms. They called it bug juice.
Mm.
And somebody would stay with you and give you an ounce an hour or an ounce every 2 hours and titrate you off slowly from alcohol. This has been around a long time. But it was when man first crushed grapes. As a matter of fact, beer was used as part of the payment to the folks who built the pyramids. That's why some of them are off to one side a little bit. No, but that's how long this thing has been around with us. And until 1935, basically the alcoholic was doomed to either insanity, incarceration, or death. And that was the only way out for the real alcoholic. For all those centuries, I like to say, they say, well, you know, for the love of Jesus, and I'm a Christian, and I have no problem. I have the love of Jesus. He's my higher power and my Savior. But I believe he directed specifically the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in this program to Bill W., the least of all men, because I believe he uses the weak things of this world to accomplish his end. And I believe that this is an inspired program. And the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a spiritual work when it's used correctly. Concur with that, Mike?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I even love the heathens. because it's supposed, if you read the traditions, we have freedom of speech, we have freedom of thought, and we have freedom of action with no one there to tell us what to do. So it's a room of anarchists, and we let God be in charge. And when this thing is worked properly, it works great.
Absolutely.
When I get out of the way. So give me the website address. Maybe give it once or twice, and then do it nice and slow. So somebody's got we have about 1,200 to 1,400 people listen in the archives, and then they'll come across this. So I want them to hear where to find you and how to find you.
Okay. Absolutely. It's reflectionsrecovery.com. It's reflectionsrecovery.com. We have a toll-free number, which is 855-75-SOBER or 855-757-6237. Again, that's 855-75-SOBER and that's 855-757-6237. And again, you can get information about us and our program at www.reflectionsrecovery.com. And
right.
Yeah, if you have any questions, you guys can contact us. We have a 24-hour on-call specialist, so that, you know, if there's anything at all, you can feel free to contact us, and we'd be happy to give you any kind of direction or any kind of help. So that's why we're here.
And you got a detox real quick. And I find that I was trying to do an app, and I think it would be great. Somebody put up that I haven't been able to do it. I haven't the resources right now or the acumen, but to put up an app on the cell phone to find where your local detox is. I think that would be a great benefit, both for a cost detox and a free detox. How many people ask me down the road, so-and-so's ready to go, but we don't know where to get him in on a detox. And, I don't know. And when they're ready to go, they're ready to go right now.
Yeah, and if that's the case, call us. We'll help you with that process. You know, that's why we're here.
That's right.
And we do, do non-medical detox. It's an outpatient detox, too. So we have a psychiatrist and attending physicians where we can help people through to detox on an outpatient basis. And if people do need that higher level of care, then absolutely we can help with that, too. So.
Oh, great. Sounds like a great program. Oh, thank you so much for being on the show. It was a good conversation. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I did want to mention, too,
sure.
Decision. I'm also a partner with Decision Point Center in Prescott, Arizona. They're an incredible program. They've been around for a long time, and their philosophy and vision and their approach to things is, groundbreaking, and they're definitely something. So if there's people in Arizona or need questions, too, just to feel free and check that out, too, at decisionpointcenter.com.
DecisionPointCenter.com, Prescott, Arizona.
Yep.
You don't have to be in Prescott, and you don't have to be in California to call these folks and get some information. They might be able to direct you somewhere else to go. There's always, if you want it, all you have to do is ask. Knock, and it'll be open to you. The opportunity to get well, get a happy, joyous, and free life is available, but you got to take the first step. You got to make that turn. You got to take that action. I believe we're saved by grace after all that we can do, not after all that we can talk, not after all that we can think, not even after all that we can pray. The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead. Thanks again, Mike. Harold, do you have any last words?
Well, I really enjoyed the program tonight and all the information and help for folks. So call those numbers. You can find a lot of help just from the 800 number for Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, humble yourself a little, reach out, get some help. That's really the first step. That's the key to everything. Just take a look at yourself. Even if you just think you might have a problem, get some help, get an assessment, so you can really have the facts. It's time to have the facts. So thanks for having me on tonight, Joseph. Nice meeting you, Mike.
Thanks, you guys. Really appreciate it. It was a great experience.
You're welcome, and I'll close with this. RumRadio.org. We're in 150 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,600 plus towns, cities, and villages, and we're approaching over 250,000 hits to the website. There's no money being made. We stay anonymous as much as we can to the 11th tradition. Didn't work out that way on Facebook, but that's the way it goes sometimes. I'm not running for dog catcher, so it's not really that big of a deal. It's really not about me. This is a God program. It's a spiritual way of giving back. So if you need some sponsorship information to get out there, get in the trenches and start working with the next sufferer, I tell my sponsees, you want to make this thing work, you're going to have to get passionate. Some people want to watch the sandbox. Get in the sandbox. Get dirty, get busy, and get a life. So again, thanks again, guys, and remember, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night.